In all the years of both giving and also listening to Dharma talks, almost 40 years or something like that, people always say, please take a comfortable position. But I've never seen anyone just lie down. So maybe they think you don't mean it. But actually, it would be a relief if somebody would just lie down. Temperature's so beautiful tonight, don't you think? It's wonderful. So soft. Our chanting was, I felt like I was on hee haw. We're really energetic. Waking up them Buddhas.
I just thought it was the acoustics from this corner. Yeah.
Wow, it's really loud over there. Yeah. It's very spirited. So I mentioned these two words, no gap. And it's actually a very good phrase, really. No gap. So much of our discomfort in our life comes because there's a gap. Gap between us and ourselves. Us and what we're doing, our activity. Us and our true nature. Much less us and somebody else. They're also having the same gap problems with themselves. So you put two gaps together and you have a lot of gaps. And then there's 6.5 billion other people, each one not quite whole with themselves, not quite completely intimate with who they really are, or what they really are, or what we really are. We're always talking about ourselves in a sort of modest way, as opposed to an egotistical way. If I have to say what no gap means, I will say it means intimacy. No room for anything to slip in between. Just completely intimate, completely one with ourselves, who and what we are, maybe our footstep, our breath, our activity. Every artist will, no matter what form their art, will tell you that it's not always the case, but when they are truly one with their activity, they don't really know they're doing it because there's no witness. They're just doing it. Like when I'm writing my poems, sometimes there's a poem, but I'm no longer aware, I'm no longer witnessing the fact of writing. That witness means there's still a little bit of a gap, as opposed to just the activity. You know, that's writing a poem. Playing music, dancing, a painting with no gap. It's that we lose the self-consciousness. And in that way, we lose the separate self. Right? We lose the self that's outside of us. And that loss is actually a sign that we're touching who and what we really are, either through the attention to breathing or through our activity. There's a kind of phrase lovers use sometimes, we were lost in each other. Lost in each other. Sounds so nice. We got lost in each other. In that moment, there's no each other because there's no other. So you don't even have to say it, really. Just, wow. That's, wow means, I looked it up, it means we got lost in each other. It's in the New Canadian Dictionary. Yes, I think it's the second definition. The first definition was indescribable. But we can sort of take that very seriously. In the Heart Sutra that we just chanted, when Avalokiteshvara realizes that form is boundless and boundlessness is form, there's no longer a gap between personal and universal life. That's, of course, there is no gap, but we think there is. You know, we insert a gap. We make the gap with our thinking or with our gapped or improper understanding. So we create that gap. The Heart Sutra is about the realization that there is no gap. And when there is no gap, there is no anguish and there is no fear. In fact, there's nothing but wholeness, because there's no room to insert any concept or idea. And this is a great gift, to be able to receive from oneself and to be able to give through how one lives to the world. In Meijuku Kanongyo, I know you don't know what it means, but the last two lines, Nenen Jushikin Nenen Furishi, it means this moment is not separate from mind. It means no separation. This very moment is mind itself. It is, you know, hitting the note exactly right, is writing the poem, is making that pirouette just as a pirouette should be. So again, no separation means identity or intimacy. And in the Sandokai, the identity of relative and absolute, which we just chanted, the mind of the great sage of India was intimately conveyed from west to east. So that means that Buddha mind, even though it's moving, is conveyed in a way that is intimate. There's no gap. And Zen depends upon this intimate conveyance or this transmission from one person to another, and has since the time of the Buddha. And that poem expresses it. In the end, when Sakitukisen says, if you do not see the way, you do not see it even as you walk on it, it means that if you have a gap between you and the way, even though you're right there, you don't know you're there. And so, of course, you suffer. When you walk the way, it is not near, it is not far. No gap. If you are deluded, you're mountains and rivers away from it. So it's like far away. So what's the solution to it? And the last line of that poem is, I respectfully say to those who wish no gap, right, to wish to be enlightened, means to wish complete wholeness of being, do not waste your time by night or day. Now, many people have asked, what is wasting time? So now we know the third definition, gap. Right, gap. Wasting time means not being fully, wholly, completely, 100%, thoroughly, through and through, all the way, intimately, who and what you really are. Completely. So, if we look at our lives, we have to admit that there's a lot of gap. And this is where our practice is so so generous, really. It gives us a chance to taste the water. It gives us a chance to practice really being completely here, moment by moment by moment, through practicing attention to our breathing, through practicing actually stepping when we step. You know, we don't, it should be obvious by now, right? We don't walk so slowly to get somewhere. We walk so slowly to walk so slowly, but to really be in touch with walking slowly.
Really
in touch with it. And gradually, when we develop that kind of awareness through our practice, it starts to affect the rest of our lives. Suddenly we realize someone's telling me something important and I'm saying, oh yeah, 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 but I'm really not there. I'm over there somewhere. I'm thinking about, you know, who knows what. Something else, something that appears more important. And then maybe we stop, just like we do with our practice, go back to our breathing, go back to our attention, and we actually listen to that person speaking. And that person may be Chris, may be someone outside of my body, or that person may be this person right here, who is trying to get this person's attention, tell this person something he needs to hear. But this person is so busy not being this person, right? Being a gap person, that this person can't hear this person. But after a while, these very simple practices start to bring us back to ourselves through bringing us back to the only moment we really have, this moment, right? If any of you have a moment that isn't this moment, please show it to me. Maybe you have it in your glove compartment. Go get it. Bring it back. But I promise you, when you give it to me, it will be this moment. So please, when you practice, consider what you're really doing. Consider what we're really doing right here. We're actually coming alive in the only moment and the only life we have, right here and right now. When we close that one gap, we close all gaps. That's it. You close it right there, and you open your own wholeness right there. Closing means opening. Closing the gap means opening no gap. Just like that. And it really is that simple. We just give ourselves again and again and again to that activity, no matter what we're doing. When I came home from the hospital today with Shirley, got her settled, and then I found a fly on its back in some water in a glass in the kitchen. So I very carefully, but I saw the wings fluttering. So I figured maybe, you know, they may not be doing the backstroke. You know, he may actually be dying. Oh, good thought. No gap. That fly is dying. Right? I'm a poet, so I could make something up and say, oh, look, he's doing the backstroke, and then he dies. But I... more than a poet, right? I'm a no-gapper. So I got a fork and put it under him, and so that when when I lifted him up, the water could drain through the fly. But I didn't think to do that. I just did it. I could have gotten a spoon and they would have drowned in the spoon. But I picked up a fork for some reason, I don't understand. And then And he went, you know, that fluttered his wings. I thought, oh, this is so far so good. And then I took him to outside, to where the air was still quite warm. And there was a towel on the railing. I put him on the towel, and kind of carefully. And he was able to stand up. And then I saw this amazing thing. He stayed right there. He just stayed there. Coming back to himself, knowing I can't fly yet. He's completely in touch with his life in that moment. I can't fly yet. So he just stayed there. And I was right here, you know, like this, nose to nose with the slide, thinking, wow. And I thought, maybe I'm scaring him, so I'll go back a little. And I went back and I stood there for a minute. So I watched him. He was sort of doing fly zazen, you know, coming back to life. through doing fly meditation. And then he was dry. And you know what he did? Yeah, flew away. A fly became a fly. Isn't that nice? It's nice when a fly can be a fly. And it's nice when a person can be a person. If he was not completely in touch with who and what he was, he might have made a false move and just, that's it. So we should be as smart as a fly, I think, and practice our coming to life as much as we can.